The following is a presentation of KSL Sports. First and 12. A total roundup of this weekend's BYU football and the new look Big 12 Conference. First and 12 is sponsored by Macy's Grocery Store. Your hosts are Mitch Harper and Alex Keery on KSL News Radio and the KSL Sports Zone.
Happy Sunday to you, everybody. Oh, look at that. I got my voice back. You know what that means? We're going to put a bow on this entire first and 12 season. Alex Keery, Mitch Harper, right here on KSL News Radio and on the KSL Sports Zone 97.5. Oh, my goodness. Mitch, we've come to the end here. Our producer, Eric, said it right before we started up here. Blake and I, the season's over. Not just that. Like, we're week 14 now, man. Like, the conference championships are in the book. We've got college football playoff stuff that's going to be obviously invading our world over the next month. We're super excited about it, but I cannot believe that everything went so quickly. We shouldn't be shocked. We do this every year.
An eventful Big 12 football season, and you know, we'll unpack what happened yesterday with the championship game. And what's going to be fun, too, in hour number two is we're going to do a look ahead to 2024 and put our power rankings with all 16 teams in the new Big 12. So hang tight. We're going to have a loaded 2 hours here putting a bow on Big 12 football in 2023. But we start things off with the headlines.
12 headlines.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
The dozen storylines that shape this week of Big 12 football. Headline one.
Oh, my goodness. Texas is your Big 12 champion. Of course, they lock out the season. And really, this is it. This is a historic thing. I don't want to minimize what Texas did this year and what Steve Sarkisian did this year. This is something that they don't do very often. Frankly, for all of the hype that they always get, we stood there on the same field that they played that championship game on back in July, Mitch, when they rolled this thing out and the media polls had Texas at the top of that thing, and we all looked at each other and went, well, what happens when it doesn't happen? But Sark came through, man, and it wasn't just a big win this year. They go 12-1, and they blow out Oklahoma State in kind of a dog of a game, but certainly Texas showed their beef and showed that they don't necessarily need their best players on the field to be able to beat the Oklahoma State Cowboys.
First Big 12 title for Texas since 2009. It's been a long time.
Can
you believe it? And, you know, it's crazy because they'll now exit the league and act like they just ran the ruse. But for 14 years, they didn't really do much. And they were still kind of a play away against Kansas State from missing this thing altogether. So it was a tougher road than people thought. But, you know, Texas, great champion. They were really good this year, 12-1. We'll see what happens a little bit later today with their situation. But Texas, your Big 12 champion and well-deserved.
Quinn Ewers, headline number three. He wins the WWE Big 12 Most Outstanding Player belt. Got it from The Undertaker. I'm trying to think of anybody better it could have been from. My kid was watching this game with me yesterday, Mitch, and that black belt is in the middle of the field. He's like, what the heck is going on these hashes here? Why do they have the belt on the field? I go, oh, because the Big 12 can't do it anything else but a little bit different than everybody else, including when my and that's headline 4-2. I had to bring it up because my wife goes, is Nelly on TV right now? Is he still a thing? And I went, honey, you shut your mouth. How dare you defile Nelly? She got it, though. She was like, are they trying to do a Super Bowl thing? I said, yeah, it's not really working out. She goes, so they bring out him and four backup dancers, and that's your halftime show.
How funny was it, though, when you see the school, you see the school bands and women from like the Texas band are just getting it, dancing. What does it take to be number one? What is it? He's doing, it's getting hot in here. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm getting excited. It's like 2003 all over again, baby. I'm ready.
I think that's like part of the life that my wife was trying to forget about, like in the high school. She's like, I gotta get out of here. Like, I don't feel good with all this music.
I was ready to go to like a club and like just go. I was ready to like go get it and start dancing.
Not a club, Mitch. Club Omni, 2003, yes. 2004. Get me going, man. Oh my goodness.
But Texas fans, though. They made their voices heard. They relentlessly booed Brett Yormark, and then they chanted, SEC, SEC.
With the southern accent from the crowd. Now, listen, he knew he had to take that medicine, right? You saw the look on his face. That's a guy who he knew He's been a part of weird rivalries. This is about as weird of a rivalry as you get when a conference commissioner has to eat crow at the 50-yard line at the Big 12 championship game. Exactly what he didn't want to do. But you know what? I mean, I will say, though, out of all the conference championship games, this, the Pac-12 game, I don't, the SEC almost became kind of a classic, but even then it kind of fizzled out. I think it was, when you talk about champions, and you talk about things that, teams did to kind of get where they are, I thought Texas kind of put on a show today or yesterday, and that's exactly what you got. I think that it was the right thing, and you can't deny that Brett Yormark brought something different to the conference this year.
That he did. But I got to ask you, though, Alex, headline number six, how concerned are you about what this performance from Oklahoma State does to the image of the Big 12 moving forward? Because you got to imagine the national writers, the national media are going to say, well, this is the new world of the Big 12. You're just going to be completely thumped by anyone from the SEC, the Big Ten. You're in a far lower tier. You might be power conference in status only, but there's no proximity or closeness to you and the SEC. I think it's going to be a narrative going forward.
Yeah, but I will say, too, though, this is exactly what these other conferences do. Top heavy, right? Maybe you have one or two that are the top. I mean, you could make an argument. I was pretty disappointed. I mean, Ollie Gordon from the very beginning did the same thing he was doing against BYU, or just like, oh, my ankle, he wasn't 100%. And Oklahoma State does not have a quarterback. Like, you could tell they were so far behind the eight ball. But I mean, it's not like the SEC. One or two good teams, right, every year, and every few years maybe an LSU. But, like, you can't make some argument that you're some heavyweight with a couple of good teams. And the Big 12 is going to have, just like everybody else, probably a couple of good teams every year. They're going to be pretty darn good. I think the additions to the conference are going to help out in that respect too. Does Texas actually end up in the college football playoff? The answer is probably not here, and we're going to find out in the next few minutes, obviously. But I don't think Texas is going to have enough to get there. I think the committee is going to have to figure it out and say, hey, yeah, I guess we're going to have to throw either Georgia or Alabama in this thing, and it's likely going to be Alabama. I don't know. I don't know what to think. I don't want two SEC teams in there, but I really don't think Florida State is it. But that's another argument we can have on a different show.
Everyone was hoping Oklahoma State would bring the version of Oklahoma State in Bedlam. Instead, we saw Oklahoma State against USA. They were just not good in Arlington, and that was a disappointing performance from Mike Gundy's team.
Headline number nine, the Big 12. Was it Times Square? Of course, because Brett Yormark's like, how can I get in New York? How can we do something? It's on the big board at Times Square. It was a little bit. It was a hard try, but that's what he does, man. He gets it out there, and I think that it's aggressive. You might roll your eyes at it, but it's something that people talked about, and that's what he's going to do is get some reaction.
The All Big 12 teams were announced this week, and the Coach of the Year, Mike Gundy, the Offensive Player of the Year, Ollie Gordon from Oklahoma State, well-deserved on that front. I thought Ollie was definitely the best offensive player in the league.
But was Mike Gundy the well-deserved coach of the year?
No, that was totally the continuing members saying, we're not going to give it to Sark. Yeah. We're not going to give it to Brent Venables. We're going to make sure it's going to Mike Gundy.
Big middle finger from the rest of the staying conference members. And, look, that's what you got to do. They called each other, right? He was like, hey, Lance, it's me, Chris Kleiman. You're not voting for Sark or Venables, are you? No, me neither. Okay, cool. Just making sure we're all on the same page.
Well-deserved, though, Defensive Player of the Year. You saw it
yesterday
with DeFondre Sweat. He was outstanding. He had the big medallion at the press conference. He's a heck
good
of a player, DeVondre Sweat. He was Defensive Player of the Year. BYU had a few guys on second team, all Big 12, Tyler Batty, Ryan Rico, and Kingsley Suamataia. But, I thought that was pretty solid across the board. No real omissions, I thought. I thought it was pretty solid on those Big 12 awards, other than maybe Mike Gundy getting Coach of the Year. You could raise some questions there.
And then finally, I was going to ask you this on the way out here. Where do you think Oklahoma and Texas are going to end up in the SEC if we're going to just kind of really put our crystal ball to work here and try to figure out where they're going to end up at the end of next season?
Texas, I think, in the top four of the SEC. I think Oklahoma could be the next Tennessee, the next Nebraska, maybe, where they become, they get lost, where they're 6-6 and 7-5, and then maybe once every 7-8 years, there's a great year. But maybe Nebraska's a big stream because Oklahoma's a winning program.
Yeah.
But maybe more Tennessee, where it's consistently 7-5, 8-4, And I just don't
every
see Oklahoma
once in a while,
being near the top
once in
at
a while
all.
You show up. Yeah, and you know, I here's another kind of burn on the conference a little bit. When Dylan Gabriel is your first team quarterback for the conference, you kind of go, is that what you got? Is that what you have right now? I mean, that's more of a indicator of kind of where things are at in the Big 12 overall quarterback wise. But yeah, I don't think Oklahoma's going to be able to get it done, you know, quite there. The good news is this, but if you're Texas, you need to be careful because just having a lot of money, ask Texas A&M, does not get you necessarily anywhere when it comes to that. You got to legitimately compete on the recruiting front. All right, there you go. We're going to lock things out on that with our final Big 12 headlines of the season there. We're going to come back, give some reaction this hour because, you know, I think we're doing things just a little bit different this week because we're kind of putting a bow on the entire season. A season recap for the BYU Cougars. We're also later going to do a season recap of the Utah Utes. We're going to end up, of course, as conference members come August. So we'll get into that as well. We've got takeaways from the season. Next hour, we got tons to get into because the power rankings this week, Mitch, aren't just going to feature the 14 schools. We're going to take away Texas and Oklahoma. We're going to add the Four Corners schools like we've been waiting to do all season. And then we're going to argue about where they should be from 1 to 16. All right, we'll come back. More to go right here. It is KSL News Radio. It is the KSL Sports Zone. And this is 1st and 12. Alex Keery, Mitch Harper. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Read all the stories about BYU sports no one else has heard. Go to KSLSports.com for exclusive columns by BYU insider Mitch Harper. That's KSLSports.com.
Season finale of Big 1st and 12 here. A Big 12 check-in every single week here on KSL News Radio and the KSL Sports Zone. Mitch Harper, Alex Keery, been with you every week during the Big 12 football season, and it has been a blast. Even though this team that we're talking about, the BYU Cougars, was far from a blast, it was an up-and-down roller coaster, and there were some real downs as the Cougars crawled to a 5-7 finish, and now they have questions as to who they go, who they replaced on their coaching staff. A lot of questions that need to be answered for this program. But in year one of the Big 12, Alex, they got a real taste of life in the Power 5 league. And it was, I think, an eye-opener for the Cougars.
Yeah, and, you know, and the fan base too, right? I mean, I think that what ends up happening is you watch, you know, the team and you kind of try to figure out exactly where they're going to be. And you try to guess from week to week, right? And we're the worst of it because we have – you know, we don't just swoop in and kind of get a small glimpse of what the team is. We over analyze and we break it down and we listen to these interviews all week and we kind of are so closely associated with these teams that we cover here locally, especially BYU in the case for you. And you know, we kind of have to jump into these teams so deep that we tried to figure it out right along the way and try to have the answers along the way and try to have the fixes along the way. And I think when you're that closely associated with it, it's hard to really get a step back and really kind of see what the team for what it was, which was not ready for Power 5 football yet. And that's the way that teams, when they get into the Power 5, they find it out, right? I mean, I think the difficulty was is that BYU also found out that when times got tough, they weren't ready for that either. I think that was the part that I think people really had to get a dose of, Mitch, was the coaching staff, the fan base, the team itself were not ready for, a losing streak that was the type of losing streak that they saw because it wasn't just losing games. It was historically bad offense. It was historically bad running game. It was historically bad quarterback play. And so those things all adding up made it feel like that 5-7 felt even worse, right? I'm not trying to pile on here. I just think that it was a shocker for me even to watch that understanding kind of what BYU had talent-wise and then actually kind of missing on that. And maybe it was because they weren't ready for the level of failure that they had, and that kind of sort of snowballed and it made it worse, and then the pointing fingers inside and outside the locker room probably got to them as well.
And the blowout losses, too, to TCU, to yes. Texas, West Virginia, Iowa State, like 5-7, I think, Alex, would have been a schedule or record that – fans would have said, okay, you know, year one of the Big 12, you can live with that and move on and understand that this was a big step up for the program. But how low they fell, where it was like, can you get a first down? Can you get a stop on third down defensively? That's how bad it got in some stretches. And the beatdown they took in West Virginia, that was one of the worst performances I've ever seen from a BYU football team, to where you could have made the argument, clean out the whole entire staff. It was a fireable offense across the board. So credit BYU to actually kind of dig in a little bit and actually show some life against Oklahoma and Oklahoma State? Because I'll tell you, Alex, I did not think they had it in them to be competitive at all. I thought in those games against the Sooners and Pokes, I thought they are just going to get wrecked. They are going to be destroyed. So that was some promise, and I think that gives you some hope. But I think looking forward, you know, what do you do at quarterback? Because as we talked in the opening segment, this league, there's a real power, there's a real opening to be the best quarterback in the Big 12 next year. I think there's a case to be made with some of the newcomers, and we'll get to them here shortly. But, you know, as far as the returning members in the Big 12, who's going to be that top QB? And BYU right now doesn't have anyone that says they're the guy. It's not Jake Retzlaff. And if you really want to get real crazy and throw out a wild card like I've done, maybe it'd be Ryder Burton. But that just sounds extreme to go with an 18-year-old in year two of the Big 12 when you have jobs on the line. So this is a critical offseason for Kalani Sitake and his staff to really get some quick fixes to where they're in a position where they can get to be competitive but also get to a bowl game next year.
Yeah, and I would say, too, that you have to pump the brakes a little bit on just like, well, go to the portal. Hey, Will Howard's available. Like, I mean, I'm telling you, you and I both saw the same thing out of Will Howard, which was he's a mid-Big 12 quarterback, which is what we found out is not a great quarterback, right? We thought Will Howard was going to get benched at one point this year, right, by Kansas State. Mm-hmm. I think that you heard this week that Matt Rhule had said, the head coach of Nebraska, hey, you're going to need $1 to $2 million to get a quarterback out of this, you know, that's a competitive good quarterback out of the transfer portal. And that should punch BYU fans in the gut, because you're not going to compete that way. Yeah. You're going to have to attract a good quarterback out of the transfer portal with something else, unfortunately. And it's not going to be a seven-figure deal, certainly. And so I think that the way you attract people, and I'll say this too, Mitch, a one-off quarterback is not what you need out of the transfer portal anyway. The reality is, even if you get somebody out of the transfer portal, you need a couple of years with them. And so if you're going to go into the transfer portal and grab somebody, if you're going to have even some sort of a vision of hope that you got, oh, let's get the next Bo Nix, let's get the next Michael Penix Jr., both of those guys, they're not in their first year. They're not one-and-done guys, right? Any of these quarterbacks that you look at that are transfer portal quarterbacks, they are not one-and-done people, right? And so do not look for a one-and-done. Don't look for another Keaton Slovis. And you're right, but it has to be something, because the reality is that, yeah, the quarterback room is a struggle right now, and I just don't see developing somebody like Jake Retzlaff, like, that's going to turn a corner massively next year. But I don't know, maybe you disagree with me, but I'm looking at the transfer portal and saying grab somebody who's got 2 years or maybe even three left, and maybe you develop from there, or at least put them in the quarterback room to be competitive against the guys you already have.
Completely agree, and I wouldn't be surprised, Alex, if Arizona State quarterback transfer Drew Pine is someone that BYU targets. I know that doesn't excite folks, but he was kind of the Plan B in the 2023 cycle behind Slovis for BYU.
Notre Dame guy that beat him at Allegiant Stadium a couple of years ago.
You know, and it's interesting, too, because with the transfer portal, I thought BYU adding a top 20 transfer portal class, I thought, you know, that might be enough to get to six wins, but it might have been too much influx of newness for BYU in a new league. And it almost seems like, you know, adding, you know, 25 transfers was too high of a number. I mean, maybe the sweet spot is 12 to 15, but the problem that there, Alex, is the roster returning. I don't know who you see in the underclassmen that's a bona fide Power 5 Big 12 guy.
Right.
I don't know. There's not many. I mean, Siali Asera, really like him. He's a young linebacker. Harrison Taggart, like him. Ace Kafusi. It's kind of residing at the same position, but outside of that, I'm kind of like underwhelmed with a lot of the future prospects at the position. And that's where you think Kalani has to maybe go to the portal in large numbers once again. But you look at transfer portal classes around the country, the number one portal class in the 2023 cycle was Colorado. They're not too happy right now, going 4-8. USC was number four. They're 7-5, and they're completely underwhelmed. And number five was Auburn, and they lost to New Mexico State. So, you know, the transfer portal, as we're getting more intel every year about this thing and the volume in which you turn to with these classes, it just seems like you can't go completely, you know, extreme with that portal. I think USC a couple years ago was this chasing ghost situation where people thought, oh, you can just get that quick Lincoln Riley fix. But that's USC. BYU's not going to be that. And you got to be able to still develop at BYU. And the high school recruiting has to improve for the program. And I think an underrated storyline that when I look back at this year, Alex, that I think hurt BYU was their strength and conditioning staff was new, but they didn't get it finalized until June. And I kind of wonder if that was a piece as to why BYU was such a soft football team this year, because typically with BYU, in recent years, it's been a violent football team, especially at the line of scrimmage. When you add in all the new faces, and then you add in a strength and conditioning staff that didn't get finalized until after Memorial Day, I think it kind of left BYU as a soft team. And the first impression in this new league was that BYU is kind of a pushover, which was not expected coming into this conference, and that's a big disappointment.
Okay, well, since you went so negative, Mitch, gosh, I can't believe you. Give me something positive that BYU fans can kind of chew on here, while we're talking about it, that might make them feel a little bit better about next season.
I think that BYU will find a way to get to a bowl game because Kalani Sitake, I think, will, whenever he pulls a coaching staff lever and he makes a change, he always upgrades. And even though Jay Hill, statistically, it was not pretty this year. I mean, they finished what? They were 107th in total defense this year. Not far off from what Elisa Tuiaki's defense was, but I thought it still upgraded. I think that BYU will find a way to upgrade and get the most out of this offensive line. And I think also, too, you got to hope that you can get some of those COVID junior backs. You talked with Connor Pay this week on JJ and Alex. Get him back. Try to get a Ben Bywater back. Get a Tyler Batty back. I think those are guys that if you can get them, that's almost like a big transfer portal win. But those guys, unlike a portal guy, they've got continuity. They've got buy into this program, and they want to turn it around. So that's got to be the move, and I think there's a big push to try to get those guys back and maybe pivot from NIL for all 123 guys and maybe focus on guys at the top.
Let's take another break here. We'll come back. Our program, by the way, brought to you by Macy's. Happy shopping. Get the freshest fruits and vegetables. Get your local, the local brands that you really, really appreciate. Of course, Macy's does such a great job, and they've supported us all season long. Macy's Happy Shopping. All right, we'll take the break here. We'll come back. More to go on 1st and 12 on KSL News Radio and the KSL Sports Zone. We'll break down Utah's season as we look forward into their first season of the Big 12. Stay right here with us.
The following is a presentation of KSL Sports. 1st and 12. A total roundup of this weekend's BYU football and the new look Big 12 Conference. 1st and 12 is sponsored by Macy's Grocery Store. Your hosts are Mitch Harper and Alex Keery on KSL News Radio and the KSL Sports Zone.
All right, happy Sunday to you, everybody. Thanks for being a part of 1st and 12. All season long, we've been bringing you Big 12 coverage. Pretty unique show, Mitch. I mean, I don't know anybody who does something like this, certainly in the market, but we dove into this that was just Big 12 heavy with that lens of BYU entering the conference this year, and we've had a blast talking about it, and now we've got even more fun stuff because as soon as we decided we were going to do this program kind of early, I guess we start talking about it in the summer, and then the four corner schools end up not just being a rumor, but they end up being the teams who are joining the Big 12 next year. Obviously, everything got thrown through a different lens as we watched Utah this year. And certainly, we were trying to figure out what the biggest sports story of the season has been. And I think you could make an argument that Cam Rising, and really like the week-to-week wondering of what was going on with Cam Rising, could have been the biggest sports story of the year. Am I wrong? That's the thing we obsessed over, it seemed like, so much. And everything was just, what's going to happen with Utah? And Utah's entire season, I think, was affected, obviously, by what was going to be going on in that quarterback room. And, by this week we had Nate Johnson on, who was leaving the school for the last time with us. He was on with us for 13 different weeks this year. And he kind of gave us a peek into what he was going through. But, man, Utah and what they went through this year, overall, an insane year to go 8-4 in a conference that you have won the championship the last 2 years. But the job that Coach Whittingham and that staff did to keep that team together and not just – win games, but be still one of their top teams in the Pac-12 was a pretty impressive season for them, knowing that they didn't have Brant Keithy, that they didn't have Cam Rising, and that was just the beginning because they lost seemingly so many other guys for the rest of the season. I've never seen injuries like this in my entire career, and Utah handled it as well as a professional staff could have. Most would shrink at this and not have anywhere near a good season.
Utah's depth was on display this season, and you're right. I mean, the injuries, the key players, even like Lander Barton, Logan Fano, they all went down with an injury. And then in the preseason, there's these strange an accident to Brandon Rose, and there's a family member posting some strange social media post. It was just a right. weird year in so many different avenues when it came to injuries for Utah. Yet at the end of it, they still sit at 8-4. And maybe what was the, you know, I know this isn't a Pac-12 show, but the Pac-12 was probably the best league in the country this season. I know Greg Sink in the SEC is saying they're Sesame Street, and one's like not like the other, but give me a break. Like, I thought the SEC was kind of underwhelming outside of the top two, in my opinion, this year.
Sure,
Pac-12
yeah.
was pretty deep. It was a deep league this year, and Utah navigated it with an 8-4 mark. And I really think, you know, I think, though, the issue – for this season was it's kind of a missed opportunity because, you know, with those injuries, you wonder what they could have been, because there was a feeling coming in that they were maybe playoff good or at least three-peat Pac-12 title good. I don't know if they were on the level of Oregon and Washington even at full strength, but the chances of hanging with Oregon in Salt Lake would have definitely been better if you had a, you know, fully equipped Cam Rising back there. But they had some revelations on the personnel side. I mean, Sione Vaki, what a story that was, having him become just this dynamic playmaker and just kind of dynamic athlete. I remember when he was coming out of mm-hmm. high school, and he was just this kind of unknown guy, and it's just kind of a classic Utah player where, you know, I think there's so much talked about their recruiting is going to this level, but it's always these kind of under-the-radar dudes that emerge as the standouts for Utah, and they're kind of the bread and butter of the program. They really round out the depth, so he was a big story. And, yeah, it was just a solid year, but still kind of leaving you wanting more, and you wonder how much the transition changes, like, the excitement and the urgency on the recruiting trail for Utah football going to the Big 12, because the fan base clearly is not interested in it, but I don't think that's necessarily the sentiment within the program per se.
Well, and Kyle hasn't helped, I think, right, with some of the stuff he's talked about. Most of it, I think, is basically like, I can't focus on that right now. They'll
sure.
have to,
yeah.
obviously, when it comes around. And frankly, the reason that they're going to be one of the teams that are going to be, I think, toward the top of our power rankings next hour when we roll them out is because they do already have that built-in depth. I mean, they have the depth today to be able to compete, you know, and the good news is next year when all these guys come back healthy, and we'll see what the transfer portal does to them on Monday. But I'm really interested to see what they can do, because the depth is already there. The culture of the program has obviously been established for 20 years, and so I think you have this benefit. And whether or not they're more talented than everybody else across the board, it doesn't really matter, because I think that they end up getting dudes, and if they get Cam Rising back, then they'll have a shot. They're not going to be playing against Oregon and Washington next year, right? I mean, there aren't an Oregon and a Washington in the next Big 12, at least right now. So I think that they have to be up there and consider that. And with Cam Rising coming back and making that announcement, this Utah team this season, I think about, you know, you think about the Oregon State game and how flat that game was and how the Oregon game was a blowout, which is very rare at home for Utah. You know, you think about even – that Arizona game was a massive shock. You know, everybody looked around at that game and went, what is going on here? But then you lose to Washington. It felt like a lot of those games that, you know, BYU losing to Oklahoma by, you know, a score because of, you know, one or two bad decisions. They were in that game. And I think Utah fans would look at that and go, yeah, if Cam Rising's in that game, they win that one up in Seattle and they shocked the world a little bit. And I can't argue with them. But Utah's 8-4 season, certainly the reason everybody's going to kind of look past, I think, a little bit of what the result was, is because they're used to going to the Rose Bowl the last two seasons. And now you're likely going to what, like the Las Vegas Bowl. And more importantly, the opponent that I've seen projected, I mean, a Northwestern and Utah matchup, like, forget about it. Like, that's – they played Northwestern before, and they didn't care about that matchup either, right? And so we'll see. I think when you're used to, you know, dining at the big kids' table and then you get relegated to – the little kids table for bowl season, and I say little kids table because you're used to being in a New Year's Six game, everything else feels little, right? And so That's the standard that they have at Utah now, and I frankly think they'll be back at it again next year.
Utah is what Oklahoma State has been every year for years in the Big 12, where Oklahoma State's had a little more ups and downs. Utah's been more consistent, but very good, well-respected. They've never broken through. And even this year, you know, with the pig farmer, Bryson Barnes, in week two, they nearly got upset by Baylor, who was the worst team in the Big 12 this year. I'm very curious to see. Utah is the most stable brand and program in the new Big 12 because you know what you're getting with Utah. But are they still going to be, you know, I think everyone's just going to assume they're going to step in and just run the league. But again, like week two against Baylor, extreme heat. I think it was like, what, 115 on the field? It was nuts.
Right. It was bad.
But still, that was the worst team in the Big 12 from the get-go. I mean, Baylor was bad in week one when they lost to Texas
right.
State, and they got taken to the horn with Baylor. I just think there's always a little bit of a transition when going to a new league. And, again, I really kind of curious to see what changes from a recruiting perspective for Utah in the Big 12 conference. They've cleaned up when it comes to in the state and also identifying under-the-radar guys, but also really getting some high-profile battles in California. They've had some history, too, over the years with Morgan Scalley in the state of Texas. I think that's only going to be enhanced now being in the Big 12 conference. But do they continue that momentum on the recruiting trail where they're knocking on the door as a top 25 recruiter? Because someone in this league has to emerge as that. It's looking like Texas Tech. TCU's a consistent top 25 team in recruiting the last couple years. Utah, do they become in that mix too? That's the key. If someone's going to emerge as a consistent, annual, kind of bell cow brand in this new conference, they got to be, you know, big time on the recruiting trail every single year. And Utah's got the cachet in recent years to pull that off. But I think that they've also had some issues when it comes to postseason. They haven't won the bowl games. They haven't won those huge marquee games outside of USC. I mean, I look at this year's schedule, there was not many great wins on this season. I mean, anyone that was, you know, near the, you know, in the rankings, they lost to. And that's kind of one of the things, too, with this season is that all their losses are to teams that are currently ranked in the top 25. But just kind of a transition year due to all the injuries that they underwent.
Let's take a break. We'll come back. We've got more to chat about here. Our biggest takeaways from the Big 12 season in 2023 and what to look forward to in 2024. And then, of course, next hour, we're going to have our 16-team Big 12 2024 way too early headlines, way too early power rankings, all of it. We're very excited about it. So stay right here with us. More to go around the corner. It is First and 12 brought to you by Macy's Happy Shopping right here on KSL News Radio and on 97.5 the KSL Sports Zone. We'll be right back.
Today's just the start of a Big 12 and Power 5 talk to come. Listen to JJ and Alex Monday on your drive home. Afternoons from 3 to 6 on 97.5 the KSL Sports Zone.
That's right. You can listen to Alex Carey every single weekday. KSL Sports Zone with Jeremiah Jensen. They're holding it down on 97.5. The KSL Sports Zone, 3 to 7 every single weekday. You can hear me, Cougar Nation, on Mondays in basketball season. We'll be taking your phone calls during the hot start to Cougar Hoops and also Cougar Sports Saturday with Matt Biamonte, noon to 3. Some takeaways from the
BYU and Utah basketball this week, right? Isn't that what we're looking at? Is that kind of the big one going on at the Huntsman Center?
Saturday, going to be a big one. It should be a lot of fun.
You know what that means? Heavy trash talk as of the very first basketball version of Cougar Nation tomorrow night. I'll predict it for you guys, so I'm excited for you dudes.
We're going to have a lot of fun. And this show is always brought to you by Macy's Grocery Store, your local fruits and vegetables from your local farms, local brands, Macy's Happy Shopping. Some takeaways from the Big 12 football season in 2023, Alex. What's kind of some of your key takeaways?
Yeah, I think that overall I can't help but look and go, man, the quarterback talent was not great. If you're going to look at, I mean, and you don't, listen, we all know the best running backs came out of this conference, right? Like, there are lots of good ones across the country, but a lot of them came out of this Big 12. But you don't want to be the conference known for, you know, being the RBUs, you know? Like, everybody wants, the reason that the Pac-12 was so sexy for everybody else this year was, you had the Heisman Trophy winning returning quarterback, and he was a dog compared to the other guys, right? Like, this was a quarterback's conference of the Pac-12, and frankly, you need that. And I don't think that you have a lot of great quarterbacks in the Big 12. I think Quinn Ewers is starting to become something special. I wonder if he – is he going to end up coming back to Texas next year? I mean, that's really the crazy thing. And he's not even going to be in the conference. So that's what I'm saying. Is talent-wise, that's a guy that people look at and they go, yeah, and then what? What's going to happen in this conference? I mean, Will Howard, people are talking about this guy is the bee's knees in the transfer portal. I told you, and we've talked about it, I don't like that dude as somebody who you're going to, you know, hang your hat on. But I think that the quarterback problems across the conference are pretty injuries were also an issue across the conference. But I think overall, top to bottom, there were shocking moments in the conference. There were teams that underperformed. There were teams that we had no idea that they had the talent that they did, and they showed up to play. And the newcomers were kind of right along what newcomers do, Mitch, which is to underperform their first couple of years. It's not an easy thing to make that transition into Power 5 football.
No question. And when you talk about the quarterbacks, I mean, there was no QBs from the programs that are going to continue in the Big 12 next year that had over 3,000 yards in the regular season. Alan Bowman exceeded that mark with the 13th game yesterday. But Donovan Smith, he was number two from Houston. You're looking at Donovan Smith as one of the best QBs in the nation? No.
Right.
Like, I mean, it was a down year. I would probably say out of the returning programs in the league, Rocco Becht from Iowa State, who was the freshman of the year in the conference, he's probably maybe the big name. But still, that doesn't kind of leaves me a little empty moving forward
right, exactly.
with the league. But, you know, one of the takeaways that I had, and Brett Yormark spoke to the media yesterday, and he noted this, and it does stand out. There was great parity in the league this year. I think going into the final week of the regular season, there was still seven teams out of the 14 that mathematically had a chance to go to Arlington and play in the Big 12 title. And this was a wild league that had so much entertainment as far as, you know, if you follow this league and you have programs that you care about in this conference. But I do wonder, how does the Big 12 kind of reach some of the other conferences, some of the other fan bases, that it becomes a national league where you feel like, okay, I'm an ACC fan, but I got to know what's happening in the Big 12 because it has a ripple effect on what this or our program's going to do or our league's going to do. That's one of the challenges, and maybe the 12-team playoff helps those efforts. But, you know, there was great parity in this conference, and it was a lot of fun because, let me tell you, I mean, every Sunday morning when we're putting together these power rankings, it was like, whoa, we are so off from last week because there was, you know, the bottom half all won. It was a wild league this year in the Big 12 conference, but even though the projected winner ended up ultimately winning it.
Yeah, and that's the part, too, that was a little disappointing is that, I mean, TCU, obviously, that's a storyline that you go, man, they go from being the national runner-up, right, in the college football yeah. playoff to being what they were, which was, you know, I mean, not even making a bowl game, right? And yet at the same time, BYU fans are like, yeah, they killed us down in Fort Worth, right? And so the week to week, you didn't know what you were going to get, which was – you know, I think about that Oklahoma State loss by 6 touchdowns to UCF, and I go, oh, my goodness, what is this league even, right? Like, there's no version of that in other leagues, right? Like, at least there hasn't been. Where is there a league where, you know, the second or, you know, the imagine Alabama getting their one loss this year was by 6 touchdowns. There's no freaking way, right? And so that's the part where I think that a lot of folks look and they go, hey, What's going on in this league? Because you could say parity, but you could also say very inconsistent. Now, where they are consistent, I would say some of the talent though that you have on the defensive side of the football, like the guys that took on BYU sometimes, and this is all, you know, we saw so many of these games from that perspective, right? But the trenches were just an awful place to live, man. Like there are some dogs in this conference. Those guys like attack you, man. Like. And so that's the part, too, where you go, all right, these guys compete with anybody when it comes to talent coming out of Texas, coming out of Oklahoma, coming out of even Florida, right? I mean, they know how to do it. And so from that sense, I think that the Big 12 is always going to be in pretty good shape because they're always going to be in the heart recruiting-wise in a place where they're going to be able to draw from some really, really good places that great talent comes from.
One last thing before we get to break, I was thinking too, you know, Yormark brought this up in his kind of season wrap up 88% capacity in the stadiums. That's been kind of the calling card of the Big 12 when you think about future media rights. And this league, the fan bases, they care. And I think that is something that you do have momentum building in and building on. And I think there was a lot of excitement for the newcomers. I think these fan bases, like Oklahoma State, they wanted to see BYU. They wanted to see Houston. I think there was some excitement there. You hope that it continues in the future. But that was a good sign that, you know, with so much change, that they were still showing up at the gate. And it's one of the great things about this conference going forward is that they do have passionate followings. The challenge is going to be, can you continue to grow it? And I think Yormark's the right guy to get that done, to continue to elevate the audience so this brand of the Big 12 kind of reaches new audiences. But we got to take a break, though. Hour number two coming up next, we'll get to the look ahead of the 16-team Big 12, the big storylines, the power rankings. It's going to be a lot of fun. So sit in. We're going to talk the four corners and the Big 12 next here on First and 12, and it's powered by KSL Sports.